The Around the NFL Podcast takes family walks on the beach.
Welcome to another edition of the Around the NFL Podcast. My name is Dan Hansis, coming to you from a city filled with heroes in bunkers. Mark Sessler, Chris Wessling, Greg Rosenthal. What is up, boys?
Hey, Dan.
Long walks on the beach. Not street legal, though. Greg, not street legal.
Not in Los Angeles County, right. No. Right. I have not been to the beach in quite a long time. Although apparently it's a thing that people are like driving down to, you know, San Diego County to take over their beaches.
Yeah, that's something that's going on right now in Huntington Beach, Orange County. Wes, I saw Lakeisha. You know, your wife's the best because she embraces life in a way that I'm not used to seeing, like whether it was your engagement or the walk up to your wedding or the post wedding celebration. Now with the baby upon us here in May, you guys went to the, what do they call it? The Wild Bloom,
the Antelope Valley poppy seeds, but I don't, it may be branded as some Wild Bloom. I don't know about that.
Yeah. Well, you were the photographer for a final, what do they call it? Trimester photo shoot.
Yeah. One of your fellow Jets fans, Matt Sawicki, who used to work at the network.
Good man.
Sent me a few places, suggestions to go to, because he does a lot of photography and his wife is also pregnant. So they did a similar shoot. Keisha, as you guys know, not only a very joyous person, but places a very high priority on photographs and pictures and, she's good at them. Like I thought the photos were great, and it was mostly just because she had set it up in the right locale with the right dress at the right time.
Extremely tasteful is how I would put it. And don't cheat yourself, Wes. You're the man hitting the button. Ultimately, the super bloom is what it's known as.
Well, I think I do love photography. I would say in that case, thank you to Apple and iPhone for doing most of the magic.
I think Wes hit that button about 9 months ago.
Everybody else doing okay?
Okay, Mark. Doing great.
Yeah. Mark, your weekend is okay?
I wouldn't call it that. I mean, no.
You know, it's gotten rough now where the only thing that I take joy in my entire weekend is the Michael Jordan documentary that only has 2 weeks left.
Yeah.
Yeah, yep. Long gone are the days. I remember, Dan, you and I used to, we were Mad Men. We're very into Mad Men. And that would be Sunday nights also. And like you would have a very vivacious, active weekend with friends and kids mm-hmm. and family. And then, you know, Mad Men would cap it off. Now you're just kind of doing with the Jordan doc. It's like 2 days of housebound chores and life and then an expansion into the Jordan doc, which I'm finally caught up on feel it is a wonderful piece of work.
Good. Greg, you're okay?
I'm good. Yeah. I enjoyed the weekend. There's at least some part of me.
A cynical take from Greg about during this entire pandemic.
Well, I don't know why you guys want me to like have feelings I don't have. I mean, of course, we do not. The anxiety about the world around us is ever present and like reading that is depressing. But the idea of staying home all day, mostly with my family and going out and stuff, like there is a high level of attraction for me. Like that is sneaky what I've always just wanted to do. So I don't mind the excuse.
There is a missing component there because Mark and I can easily say the same thing because we love our wives and children as well. It is still a lot. The confined space, the fact that you can't actually go anywhere, you can't take the kids anywhere. And as much as I love being with everyone, it kind of gets to you after a while. And I'm happy for you, Greg, that you apparently do not have the issue that many other people do.
No, of course. Of course, it's not like all easy, but just on balance, I guess like that level of stress I prefer over most any. And you can mix it up. Like we got some In-N-Out drive through. They didn't get out of the car this weekend, but you know, that was like a big adventure. You know, we did a lot of biking and stuff, but I don't know. I don't need an excuse to read more. It feels
well. Good. I think, like to Greg's point, I mean, one thing that's not happening is like,
wait, how do you read? How are you reading? Where are the children during this?
Fair point.
Ellis is a good minder of Walker on some level, my daughter. Okay. So it's almost like she's a babysitter. They play their games, you know, when they have their TV time or podcast listening time or whatever.
We might have the disconnect might be, Mark, and I'm sorry to cut you off there, that Mark and I have two boys, pairs of boys, rambunctious, boundless energy, and that just probably creates a totally different dynamic.
Our doctor that has known Luke and Colton since they were born has described them in quotes as active, which is, I think, a code word for a lot of other things. And, Greg, I appreciate what you're saying. And I feel like we've all given props to our family here and there. But for me, I have a theory with family, my family, which is sometimes keep them wanting more. And, you know, when you're in each other's face 24/7, I'm doing a nice job of parenting for the first 6.5 hours. But then, there comes a breaking point for me. And that's just the way that I'm made. But I'm not father of the year material, but I need a little break sometimes to re-galvanize. Sure. And that's not happening here on the 24/7 lockdown home scenario.
So you're the old carrot and the stick routine is the
absolutely,
best route to go.
Yeah. Please.
That would be a great parenting book by Mark Sesser. Like, leave them wanting more.
It's not a bad strategy, depending on your psychological makeup.
All right. We got a lot to get to. We're going to check in on the Rosenthal Wessling top 101 free agency list. There's still, believe it or not, 19 guys from that original list that are unaccounted for or don't have a team right now. But before that, we do some news, including the passing one of the all-time greats in our league.
The thing that really is one of my coaching philosophies is somehow, some way, get the winning edge in a ball game.
That is the voice of the great Don Shula, who passed away today at the age of 90, the NFL's all-time winningest coach, 347 wins with the Baltimore Colts and then with the Miami Dolphins, where he had most of his victories, including, of course, the undefeated 1972 season. The Dolphins issued a statement saying that Shula died peacefully at home. One of the great figures in the 20th century of the NFL, and said to be the patriarch of the Miami Dolphins for 50 years, according to the Dolphins. Let's welcome in a good friend of the show, the great Handsome Hank, he's known as on the Dave Damashek football program. We call him Henry Hodgson, Vice President of International for NFL Media. Hank, you are also a diehard Miami Dolphins fan. We all thought it would be a great idea to bring you in to talk about the great Don Shula, who passed away at the age of 90.
Thanks, friends. Hi, how are you guys doing?
Hey, bud.
Hey, Henry. Good to see you.
Good to see you all.
Thoughts,
Henry? Well, Henry, you look like you're coming back from vacation or something.
Yeah, that's not the case. I just heard you. I was to take your listeners behind the curtain. I was allowed to listen in to the first part of the show, and I heard three of you talking about how life with two children is so hard. I have three kids in the background here. You guys,
I told you that was a bad decision.
You did tell me at the time it was a bad decision. At the time, I hadn't necessarily counted on a 9-month quarantine. Mm. And if I had done, I would have made very different decisions in my life. But you guys are amateurs while I'm playing professional fathering.
Anyway, this is a great conversation piece for the end of your appearance. I did tee you up on the death of Don Shula at the age of 90.
I'm sorry. Yeah, no, look, I mean, it's tragic. It's really sad. Don Shula was a great coach, and I think a great man as well. If you listen to people who played for him, coached with him, fans who've had a chance to meet him, media that's had a chance to meet him.
You've met him several times, correct?
I've met him two or three times in my life. Actually, I think one time with Mark Sessler, but the first time I met him, I aged 11. The Miami Dolphins played the San Francisco 49ers in London in a game in 1988. And I ran away from home and was desperate to meet my heroes and got to shake Don Shula's hand as he walked off the practice field at Crystal Palace in London where they were practicing. And that was pretty cool for me then. In 2000, I think it was probably 13 or 14, I think almost the very first show of A Football Life, which was an NFL Network series.
Which they just put up on YouTube today. If anybody wants to watch that, they put it up in full this morning.
Exactly. And I think there's a big Shula marathon taking place on NFL Network tonight. But he came into the studio and they did a show afterwards that kind of recapped it. And I got a chance to sit with him then. And I told him when I was 11, I'd run away from home to go and meet him. And he asked for my mother's phone number so he could apologize to her on his behalf. That's what he said. He's a nice man. He's a nice man. And then the last time I think I met him was with Mark Sessler before on a Super Bowl Sunday when the Panthers were playing against the Broncos, and his son was coaching. Obviously, he was offensive coordinator for the Panthers, and Mark and I got a chance to go and say good morning to him on Super Bowl Sunday morning. So,
well, one little note on that, because I wouldn't have gone and done it on my own, and I was standing with you, Henry. It was at that time when we were all about to leave to get on the buses to go to the game.
Exactly.
And, you know, I thought, well, I don't want to bother him because he had a few people around him, and you were, and I loved your attitude, because in general, I feel like when you see someone and you have that one chance in life, go for it. But, you know, he was in a wheelchair, I believe, and he was just, you know, he had family around him, but you said, let's go do it. And I'll never forget this about Don Shula, because it was at a period where I think a lot of younger people don't really have an idea of who Don Shula is, the same way we didn't maybe know George Halas when we were just getting into football. And so you're not seeing the vibrant younger version. But when we went up and said hi to him, you know, I just thought it'd be a handshake and you're on your way. He held your hand and he said, you know, each of us, and he was like, so where are you from, Mark? And are you married? And do you have kids? And how are things for you? And I thought, whoa, wait, Don Shula is extending this meet and greet that most people would want over in 2 seconds. So I think there's another side to Don Shula that I learned about that day.
Yep, that's true. And then there's everything else about him, right? He was a coach that obviously won more games than any coach in NFL history, but he did it in many different ways. You know, he did it with the Baltimore Colts and took them to a Super Bowl. He went to the Miami Dolphins as their second ever head coach after they'd had a short coaching spell with another guy, and then coached them to 5 different Super Bowls and in entirely different ways. You had the 72 and 73, you know, winning seasons, that perfect season that everyone knows about with Larry Zonka and Jim Kick and Bob Greasy. And then, you know, 2 decades later, he was taking a Dan Marino-led team, which was, you know, at the time, something that no one had ever seen before, playing offense in a way that you know, hadn't been invented up until that point, and doing the same thing. And so I think, you know, you talk about Belichick, who's obviously right up there with him as the, one of the greatest coaches of all time, and how his teams evolve every year. And you know, Shula did the same thing, but he did it over a sort of 30 or 40 year coaching career.
Wes, why do you think that Shula doesn't get brought up in the way that some other guys get brought up, like a Halas or a Lombardi or a Belichick or a Walsh?
Well, I think part of it is the era in which he coached was not the most exciting era of football. The Dolphins were the quintessential team of the 70s, where they won with the running game and defense and did not want to pass. It was just, let's not make mistakes. And that came from Lombardi. Shula popularized Lombardi's style, really. And since Lombardi, to me, it's Shula and Belichick are the top two. And you see a lot of similarities between them. I think the highest compliment you can give to a football coach is one that was said about Bear Bryant in the South in the 50s and 60s. He can take his own and beat your own, and then he can turn around and take your own and beat his own. And Bum Phillips said that in the NFL about Don Shula. That's how the quote became popular, because Bum Phillips said it about Shula. And I think a lot of people think the same thing about Belichick. It's interesting to me that Dr. Z, Paul Zimmerman, asked a few of the big coaches in the 70s while he was writing Thinking Man's Guide to Football, give me one line about what you'd like to be remembered as. And Shula said, always fair, never screwed anybody, and his team traveled first class. And that is, there's always that sense of fairness when you talk about Don Shula. And the quote kind of morphed later in his life, after all the Belichick drama and the scandals, into Shula saying, I want them to say he won within the rules. I think that was a high priority for Don Shula.
Yep. He touched so much of football history. He played for Paul Brown. He was, as a player, he was traded as in the biggest trade in NFL history to Wee Bubank's team. I think people forget, our listeners who are young might not realize, like, Don Shula was the coach of the Colts when they lost, you know, as the biggest favorite in Super Bowl history to the Jets, to Joe Namath in Super Bowl III. And so Don Shula entered that 72 Super Bowl with a pretty big anvil on his shoulders. He had lost two Super Bowls. He had got blown out the year before with the Dolphins. So at that point, he had lost as the biggest favorite ever. He had been blown out the year before. And then they end up being underdogs the year that they were undefeated. I think you can argue, there's an argument to be made, those two teams, 72 and 73, as like a two-year unit, if you just want to kind of evaluate what was the best two-year run of all time, that those Dolphins teams, to me, would be right near the top. I think the Cowboys in the 90s would maybe be another one you throw in there.
And Shula was essentially pushed out of the job after the 95 season, a 9-7 season. And there were some, you know, bad feelings about that. Shula didn't sound like he was ready to go, but the organization was ready to move on. And I think it's notable that they decided that Shula maybe didn't have the edge anymore. And he was a guy that regularly took them to, you know, 9, 10, 11 wins, playoffs all the time, obviously the Super Bowls. And ever since he left, it's been, what, almost 25 years now. They haven't done almost anything in the league, as you know more than anyone, Henry. So I think with time, Shula deserves even more respect for it's so hard to be consistent, not just year after year, but decade after decade. And that's what he brought to the Dolphins.
Yeah, he did. And I think around that time as well, you saw that there were three kind of great coaches in that period, Tom Landry and Chuck Knoll, who continued coaching. And each of those guys sort of saw their present perhaps not matching up to their past. But Shula outlasted those guys. I remember it, just before he retired, they really made a big effort to try and sort of stock up the team for one more run for him. And it didn't work out. But, you know, he continued to, I think the best rivalry at that time was between him and Marv Levy of the Buffalo Bills. And just, you know, seeing those two teams go head to head a couple times a season and often in the playoffs as well. It was pretty cool to have that chance to then, you know, understand that you're watching one of the greatest ever to do it as the coach of your team.
He also had a big impact. He was on this competition committee, which I wouldn't remember, yeah. But I, you know, checked out America's Game, which is probably the best single book on football history. And the competition committee was Shula, Tex Schramm, the old Cowboys, you know, executive, Al Davis, and who am I forgetting here? Paul Brown. And they basically set the course of a lot of the rules of everything that happened during the 70s. When West gives a lot of credit to the NFL for being a league that's always trying to adjust and always try to improve it, it sort of started with those guys in the 70s. And Shula was like a huge part of that, including like making, like looking to make some rules that ultimately hurt him, because, like, you know, he was known as almost like the Patriots in the early 2000s, is they were so physical that they almost changed the rules because the league was so worried that it was just becoming all defense. And he helped, you know, to change that ultimately to that ended up hurting him. He also had very bad luck, not to go on too much, but like after they won those two Super Bowls with maybe the greatest teams of all time, three of their players left for another league, three of their best players, you know, left for another league. And they didn't win a playoff game for almost a decade after that, which, you know, it's just hard to imagine.
Henry mentioned Tom Landry and Chuck Knoll, not just two great coaches, two icons of the 1970s in sports. And there was another one, John Madden, who was a great coach and an icon. Yep. And I remember reading Madden's book, and he said, out of all of us, Don Shula is clearly the best coach.
Right.
That's high praise for Landry and Knoll.
Right. And, you know, and it can become ponderous when every team releases, like, you know, endless statements when something like this happens. But if you go through and read what Belichick wrote about him and how close Shula was to Belichick's dad, and like you, Henry, Belichick got some of his starts in scouting by sneaking away from the college he was at to go sneak into stadiums to watch things. I mean, Shula to me seems to be, I don't know where we're getting the idea that he's not respected, other than the fact that I think among fans, had he won a Super Bowl or two with Marino, that might have shifted the perspective among people maybe my age, because we certainly saw the tail end of Don Shula. But he has 125 more wins than Andy Reid, 203 more than Pete Carroll on that list of all-time wins. Belichick is the only human being that could potentially catch him. And he's 43 behind in our lifetime. I mean, it's not just compiling either. He went 14 seasons before he had a losing campaign. I mean, this guy was absolutely about as much as you could imagine as a coach. And someone like Belichick reveres him to the nth degree.
Right. And the other thing I think you can measure a coach by is how many Hall of Famers they coach. Shula coached 15 Hall of Famers during his career, which I think is a pretty huge number. I think only Paul Brown, I was trying to dig for this earlier, but I think Paul Brown coached 18. But other than that, he's way out in front.
Yeah, the fact that he did it with two franchises and so quickly kind of sets him apart from those other guys, yep. I think, of his era. I think the reason why he's maybe not viewed quite, and I think he would be on the Mount Rushmore. So I don't really maybe even buy that premise, but it's probably just, you know, the over obsession with titles because of what he was 2-4, I think, in championships, if you count the Colts.
Yep.
And so, you know, you turn that into 5-1 or something, and then people feel differently, but it shouldn't all be about the titles.
And finally, just for a little bit of context on this, as everyone knows, 347 for Shula. Belichick is at 304 right now. He's 43 wins off. If he sets the record for most wins, which I think people expect, but if he does it, he'll be in his mid-70s nearly, or even beyond that potentially when he does it. So that just kind of puts it into perspective how good Shula was for, you know, so long. All right, Don Shula. Dead at the age of 90. Rest in peace. Henry, we don't want to keep you on for more bad news, but we do have more bad news, don't we? This coming in a very different realm, but you are obviously, as the vice president of international, the man, or one of the men and women behind the scenes, planning out how to spread the game and build the game and grow the game across the world. And we got some very bad news officially today, didn't we?
Yeah, unfortunately, we won't be able to play games this year in London and Mexico. All the games for this NFL season will be played in the U.S., which is obviously sad news for our fans who I know listen. A lot of them listen to you, both from the U.K. and Mexico, actually. But, you know, the good news, I guess, is that we definitely will be back in both of those countries in 2021 if events allow. You know, that's the plan. But, yeah, certainly upsetting for fans in those countries not to be able to see their favorite sport being played locally.
I see a quote on NFL.com, our story, from an individual that I'm sure you work very closely with, Christopher Halpin. I'm just curious why you're not getting the quote in this story. I mean, you used to be the chief content guy on.com before you took this VP job. It doesn't make sense to me. It doesn't match up.
Okay. Well, I'll have a word with people about that and see what we can do. Thanks, Dan.
It's a huge bummer, though. It really is. And I imagine, Henry, I know you have the power to, with a snap of a finger, to decide whether we go back to London. But I imagine in a very different world we won't be heading overseas this year either, because everything is going to be, if anything happens at all, everything is going to be very different this year. So it is, if that is indeed our fate as well, we're really disappointed. And I know the fans overseas, we've been lucky enough, Greg, the last 2 years to go to these games, and the place is packed to the gills. You see uniform people wearing jerseys from not just the teams playing the game, but it's an opportunity for these UK fans and overseas fans to kind of pledge their allegiance and wear their own jerseys for whatever team they want. So to lose that is just another thing stripped away from not just the NFL, but like the sports calendar. It stinks.
Yeah. And as cool as, you know, the Twickenham Stadium and the games at Wembley, which they're still doing, I think the games at Tottenham, which we were at last year, kind of puts it to a different level. I mean, the crowd felt like another level. Maybe it was just the sound, just how new the stadium. It just felt like it was like a Super Bowl type atmosphere that they're going to be playing in. But this is kind of the first big change. The schedule's expected to be released later this week. And I'm sure, you know, that this is kind of the warning. I don't expect a ton of other big changes in the schedule, at least not off the bat, but they're building flexibility into it in case other things need to be changed.
I mean, I know I retroactively have probably won 45 sandwiches thanks to the coronavirus based on now expired sandwich props. But I think it's a huge
congratulations,
bummer.
Congratulations,
Mark. Well, thank you. But it's, you know, in our
winners and losers from, you know, COVID-19, Mark Sessler, the only winner.
There's no bigger winner than Greg, apparently. He's having the time of his life. So I don't want to tell you. But in my keep him wanting more theory, I mean, that little trip to London was critical to build into the year for just a little bit of personal space and time in a nice hotel and meeting wonderful people. Henry, I mean, this probably wipes out 6 or 7 weeks of travel for you. You were going to go to Mexico. You do the thing where you go and do like, hey, let's go to London for a week to look at the stadium to make sure that it looks good before we go back a second or third time, right? I mean, what happens to you now?
I don't know where you get this from, but yeah, sure. I do have to make a few trips. You're right.
I got to head back to West London and stay at a Notting Hill flat so I can test the fish and chips at the stadium.
Henry's definitely read the Leave Them Wanting More parenting book by Mark Sessler.
Yeah, Mark Sessler. I did read it, and I decided I would really adopt that pretty hard.
Yeah. All right, Henry, you know, kind of not the greatest circumstances today. Don Shula dies and the international games are wiped away, but you are a man that can give us great information on both those topics, and you did. You hit it out of the park.
I did my best.
Do you want to add something positive?
More than anything, it was the positive is I got to see you guys. It's nice to see all your faces, and that's the most important thing. That's the best thing that's come out of today.
All right. Well, we miss you, Henry.
I miss you guys, too. I'm looking forward to when we can all be together again. In the meantime, Wes, I'll be around in about 35 minutes walking the dog.
All right. We'll see you and Disco in a little bit.
Exactly.
All right. See you, buddy.
See you, guys. Thanks very much.
Thanks. Well,
see you, Henry.
All right. Yeah, that's a bummer. But what can you do? Everything's different now.
They'll go back to London. I mean, to me, like, I know the NFL hates the word exhibition, but in the old sense of the word, these international games are exhibitions of football. They're a spectacle, and without fans, they don't work.
Yeah, well, that's certainly fair. All right. In other news, Andy Dalton has a new team, but it's not the team we expected it to be. Last time you joined us on the Around the NFL podcast, the Jaguars were said to be interested, and that seemed like a sensible place for him. But he ends up signing a one-year deal with the Dallas Cowboys to back up Dak Prescott. The team announced it on Saturday. The deal has a base value of $3 million, could be worth up to $7 million if he hits all the incentives. Dalton, of course, played the first 9 years of his career in Cincinnati, was released last week after making a request to the team. He's 32 years old. And Mark, this is an interesting landing spot for him because on the surface, there's a chance he just rides the pine for an entire season and then hits free agency again. But also there is some drama, obviously, with Dak Prescott and his contract situation. And now you have a very capable backup behind him / another option for Jarrah if he chooses to go down that route.
Well, I'm sure it won't be the end of the Dak Prescott, you know, drama bullets that we seem to talk about almost every show. But for me, I love the signing for Dallas. I love it for Andy Dalton. He grew up in Katy, Texas. You know, it's funny. His offense coordinator, Kellen Moore, he squared off with in two bowl games. So there's a lot of like connective tissue here for Dalton. I think it was probably from a family angle, a great thing for him. It's like, you know, when we try to figure out these landing spots, you look for need. And the Jacksonville Jaguars seem to us, with Gruden there, also the team that needed someone. And also, you know, maybe a great spot for Andy Dalton to pick up 6 or 7 starts. But I would say this about Dallas. Think of those seasons back when they had Tony Romo and he would suffer one of his like 4 billion clavicle injuries. And the guy behind him was a non-functional backup. And the season would go totally down the gutter. So I love the fact that they went out and got someone. Now, they say they love Cooper Rush, but they went and got someone they can trust. And Andy Dalton is immediately the best backup in the NFL.
Yeah, these one-year contracts that he and Winston signed, it makes sense to me that if it's the most oversaturated quarterback market we've ever seen and there's no way they're getting paid, find the best spot possible where if the starter goes down and you get placed in there, you've got the weapons to go crazy and get a big contract next year.
Yeah, Texas kid that played at TCU. I mean, there's got to be part of him that it's like a dream to play for the Cowboys. And then he's got to be thinking, if I do get to play, I could light it up with this team and rebuild my value. The fact that he's only making like a $3 million base is just wild to me. It's like Jalen Richard got more money than that this offseason. You know, Chase Daniel was getting that money more than that regularly. And so it really does show the kind of the market supply and demand just apparently has too much supply of quarterbacks. It doesn't quite check out, but you got to think that the Jaguars weren't offering like a ton of money either. And that he just chose the Cowboys because they thought, you know, that it was a better situation.
Well, also the Bengals did him no favors by, you know, they knew they were going to get a quarterback and they dumped Dalton after the draft. I mean, there would have been other options for Andy Dalton back in March.
I wonder what those options would have been other than Chicago.
Can't blame the Bengals for trying to trade him.
I don't. I'm just saying the timing probably didn't help Andy Dalton.
I think he said that as well. He wasn't ultimately thrilled with it. And I was thinking about it on Friday. We were saying, oh, this makes a lot of sense. The Jaguars could be a good spot for him. But then I thought about it some more today, and it didn't make too much sense on either side. I guess it would make sense to Doug Marrone, who needs to win games. But if he went to Jacksonville, he could end up just being the next Nick Foles there, where the team stinks and he's the veteran quarterback that seems to be going nowhere. So it's like, why isn't Minshew playing again? And then Minshew would go back in and he would just be, his brand would suffer as a result. And from the Jaguars side of things, I mean, what are you trying to do? Are you trying to go organizationally? You're trying to go 8-8 or whatever? Like, because Dalton, we know, is not a guy.
I think they are. I mean,
I know, Greg. I know everybody wants to win every week and all that. But from like a big picture viewpoint, why wouldn't you just give Minshew the reins of the team? And if he's great, you have an answer. And if he stinks, you stink. And then you get a top quarterback in the draft next year. Maybe even the big guy.
Lewis Riddick put it well to me that, you know, the backup quarterback, he thinks is a top 30 roster spot. That's how he would look at it. You know, that's more valuable than about 20, 25 roster spot. And I would agree with that. Like, it makes sense to invest in quarterbacks. It's a great move for the Cowboys. I mean, if Dak Prescott has an injury, he could keep them afloat.
And it is leverage. The Casserly quote.
Casserly quote's way better. Two more notes. Cooper Rush was waived today. So he is out of the picture in Dallas, and Dak Prescott has started 64 of 64 games since being drafted in 2016. So there is a, you never know in football, of course, but he is as durable as they come, Dak. So Dalton, you know, we'll see. He may never throw a meaningful pass for Dallas. We will see. All right, moving on. Got a little caught up in that and forgot what we were talking about next.
We got those some fifth-year options.
Oh, yeah. Fifth-year option talk.
Another daily reminder that Mitchell Trubisky exists. Another popular topic.
He is, of course, the headliner here because the former number two overall pick of the Chicago Bears, the man that was infamously, and this will go down in Chicago history, as basically the, was it the inverse of Michael Jordan dropping to the Bulls with the third pick. They passed on both Patrick Mahomes and Deshaun Watson and traded up for Mitch Trubisky out of North Carolina. And he doesn't even make it to a fifth-year option pickup after a woeful third season in Chicago where he regressed in almost every way possible. Trubisky will play out his contract in Chicago this year, potentially, but he has no fifth-year option, which is almost a given for a guy. You would think, Greg, one of the great surprises to me anyway, was how much they were in on him this time last year. To think that you fast forward 1 year and they wouldn't even be picking up the option, life comes at you fast.
Right. I mean, even back, you know, in January, them talking about Trubisky, because I think listeners should understand when you don't pick up the fifth year option, it is, yeah, I don't know if disrespect's the right word, but it's saying you don't think much of the player. I don't, like, you can't play it any other way because there is very little risk for this one last year of the fifth year option being in the current rules of picking up the option. Now, starting next year, it's going to be fully guaranteed. And then that's a totally different equation. But for this 1 year, the only reason it would be guaranteed is if he suffered like a big injury. So they're basically saying, we don't think there's any chance that we're going to want to pay him, you know, over $10 million a year next year. And if there is, whatever, we'll franchise tag him. Like, we think there's almost no chance that he's going to be a standout at the position. And the tiny chance that he gets injured, we don't even want to take that risk. Like, that's how little we think of him. That's how I see it.
Yeah, I think for me, I mean, if you're a Bears fan, you know, we all know a few, and they've been through a bit. I don't know if I trust the general manager at this point, based on the backstory to this and a lot of other stuff the Bears have done. The team has somehow completely lost any sense of identity during Matt Nagy's run. And I would say this about Matt Nagy also. This is a loss for Matt Nagy. You were brought here to coach up and develop this quarterback. And yeah, I get that the player is not ready. Mitchell Trubisky is just not an NFL starter, and we've come to that conclusion previously. But for all the pretty words and the poetry that we heard about Mitch Trubisky and all these tedious offseason meetings with these coaches and GMs, in the end, they both couldn't get it done. And I think that when they go to the cutting room floor with some of these players on the Bears, I think it's time to go a little bit higher or think about going a little higher.
Well, you're talking about Ryan Pace, and yeah.
Yes, I am.
It is, at the end of the day, this could be a, you know, Babe Ruth sold to the Yankees type of thing for the Bears. If Patrick Mahomes, because Greg, you've already said this is one of the greats of all time, right? Or something like that. He could be. And he just won a Super Bowl, and he's got an MVP, Mahomes. And I'm not even bringing in Deshaun Watson, who's also one of the great young quarterbacks in the game. If Mahomes does end up being an all-time great, that you traded up for a North Carolina quarterback and
who played one year.
Right, one year. Exactly. There were a lot of issues with Trubisky coming in.
I keep hearing from Bears fans, it's like, well, you know, you couldn't have known then. It's like, no, actually, they were sticking their neck out a little bit on Trubisky. It's part of the reason why it was so negatively received that Watson, a lot of people, everyone had Watson higher just about, and a lot of people had Mahomes higher. So it's not going back and making a change. It was kind of the draft Knicks who got super into that one year at the NFL, at UNC, that got so high on Trubisky that it's like, look, I mean, that you put your jobs in line when you take a risk like that. It's just how it goes.
Hey, stop banging the garage.
Ouch. I couldn't hear it.
And to your point on Nagy, Mark, all right. But it's like, it's kind of, he's damned if you do, damned if you don't, because you can't tell me that it's on him for not developing Trubisky, but then also say that Trubisky can't play.
Well, like, I would say this. Let's go wider, and you know, not to belabor the point, but the entire experience of the Bears offense. Matt Nagy came out of Andy Reid's, you know, tree as described as like the most capable, ready to be head coach guy. I haven't seen it yet. I don't see a huge differentiator. We talk about there being four or five coaches that really make a difference on Sundays. Matt Nagy, and he's had some issues put in his lap. I don't see him as one of those guys. Not close right now.
Well, maybe not a stud.
Coach of the year.
I mean,
he provided such a huge advantage for them in 17. And that was one of the reasons I always stayed down on Trubisky, thinking it was almost all coaching. And so I am curious to see Nagy with a different quarterback, even if it's Nick Foles.
Well, right, who will stay healthy for about 3 weeks. And then you'll have Mitch Trubisky in there with no option, having to ride out the season. Good team planning.
Here are some other notable 50-year declined options. Leonard Fournette, who actually had his best season last year, but still seems like a knucklehead, and it wasn't exactly a glowing season statistically. Let's see, Garrett Bowles, Tack McKinley,
Corey Davis, the number 5 overall
John
pick.
Ross, Cincinnati, Corey Davis of the Titans, who was supposed to be a big time ex receiver. It never happened. So yes, it is. It's a failure of the organization when you have a pick, you're declining a fifth year option, essentially, unless there's an injury or something. Typically, it's just kind of a bad look for the management that in many cases has already been swept out by the time this decision is made. All right. That's what's happening in the news. All right. Greg and Wes and also Dan and Mark put together top 101 lists. Mark, do you remember what was the pick? What was the name that we just had a little flip, I believe, in the 60s or 70s?
Yeah, we had Carlos Hyde at, I believe, 64, switched with a different player. And Greg and Wes, you know.
I thought it was Vitae. I thought it was Vitae. It
involved Carlos Hyde, if I'm not mistaken. But Greg and Wes, very in a strange series of events, somehow after we left, you know, our physical list on your desk, Dan, back when we had desks. Put out a list identical to ours, save for the two players being switched. So,
and I think it's fair to say that they had Hyde higher on their list, and yet he still doesn't have a team. So,
there you go. Case closed.
Touche.
All right. So, here's a list of there are 19 players remaining out of the 101. I'm just going to like kind of rip through the list, and then you guys want to point out anybody that jumps out to you. Cam Newton, Jadeveon Clowney, we know both their situations. Everson Griffin, Logan Ryan, Jason Peters, Darqueze Dennard, Eli Apple, Carlos Hyde, Marcus Golden, Damar Dotson, Michael Bennett, Prince Amukamara, Clayton Gathers, Eric Reed, Terrell Suggs, Damon Harrison, Mikael Hendricks, or Michael Hendricks, Tony Jefferson, not or, it is Michael Hendricks, Tony Jefferson, and Jordan Reed. Those are the 19 players. And Greg, it jumps out to me, there are players here that you can help, that will help rosters, especially there are a ton of teams out there that need, I'll start here in the secondary. And I see guys like Eric Reed and Prince Amukamara and Eli Apple and Logan Ryan. These are guys that are kind of starter level replacement type guys. Why aren't they signed yet?
Yeah, Eli Apple had a deal with the Raiders and that fell apart. I don't know if that was a health thing. He was coming off of an injury. I would expect all of those guys you just mentioned in the secondary to find a team, especially Logan Ryan, who was playing at a really high level for most of last year. There is a date, and it's unclear what the date is, but it's in the next week or so when the signings no longer count for the compensatory pick formulas. And you would think that's when some of these guys could get signed. Cause you're right. Like those guys could start Logan Ryan. I mean, Logan Ryan, and he has been mentioned as a possibility for the Jets.
Like I'd be like, super annoyed if one of these corners is not on the Jets. I would be legitimately annoyed if at least one of these guys isn't signed by the big man, Joe Douglas.
Logan Ryan stands out to me because Cam Newton, Jadeveon Clowney have injury factors, I think, that have weighed into them not signing. Everson Griffin had some mental issues a couple of years ago, and I think it's hurt him not being able to meet with teams. Logan Ryan doesn't have any of those issues. I think his problem is he pretty much made it be known he's not taking a penny less than $10 million, what he was making last year with the Titans. And maybe teams don't see him at 30 years old, a guy who a lot of people feel like is best suited to the slot as a $10 million guy.
Here's two buy low guys that jump out to me. Damon Harrison Snacks, who really struggled last year in Detroit. But before that, and by the way, there's some bad vibes, bad juju going on in Detroit, as we're hearing. And he's spoken out on that. Maybe it was just a bad year for him. I think he might have been banged up, too. If you are a team that's getting killed in the run, maybe you take a flyer on Snacks at this stage and maybe he gets the eye of the tiger back and gets healthy. Jason Peters is the other guy. He was a top left tackle for a long time. I know he's older, but at the very least, maybe a depth guy. Or I feel like at this stage, maybe like Wes, you're saying, some of these guys still value themselves at a higher place than what teams are willing to spend. But two other guys that could be starters, I think.
Does Jason Peters want to leave the Eagles? To me, he's never said anything about it that I know of, but I've had the sense that that relationship has gone on so long that he might not want to play for anyone else, and he's waiting for them to kind of extend an olive branch and bring him back. I don't know.
I kind of feel that way about Everson Griffin going back to Minnesota. I mean, he's on the record saying he'd do it in a weird offseason where maybe, you know, you can go back to a team that would welcome you. They would need him. The scheme is known. You know everything around you. You don't have to move. I mean, some of these guys might wind up in familiar spots because of something, because of what we're dealing with right now.
Yeah, the pandemic almost takes off the urge for these teams to sign these guys quick because they're not gonna have them on the field anytime soon. Anyways, Griffin is the guy who stands out to me. I mean, obviously Clowney and Cam can make an impact, but Griffin played really well last year. I mean, Griffin was probably more valuable or as valuable as Clowney was in 2019. I know he's older, and so that changes the equation, but he's been about as steady a pass rusher. If the Vikings can add him back, or the Browns, who just seem to get thrown around for whatever reason, probably because they are interested in Clowney and Griffin, if they could add one, like, to me, that would change the way either of those teams look. They already look pretty good.
I'll throw one more out there. There's someone on this list that's in the back end of your top 101 that has done something that Jadeveon Clowney has never done in six seasons. The guy that wanted $20 million a year is have 10 sacks in a 16 game campaign. That is Marcus Golden coming off a 10 sack year. That seems like a guy that should be off the market. Teams are always desperate for somebody that can get to the quarterback. 10 sacks it doesn't mean you're a stud, but it means that you know what you're doing. You're a tactician at the very least. And Jadeveon Clowney, come back to me. You don't even have 10 sacks in your whole career.
You have been quietly a little down on Clowney or suspicious of the Clowney hype for a long time. And I hear you, but
maybe
Golden,
he's my version of Mitch Trubisky for you, that when Bill O'Brien was being assassinated for that trade to Seattle, people are viewing him as Lawrence Taylor.
Well, how about when I was being dressed down as being like, you know, stop with your takes telling you that Mitchell Trubisky wasn't good 3 years ago. You know, oh, calm down. Mitchell Trubisky will be fine, please. And it's just like, Mark, you stop with your football opinion over there. You don't know what you're talking about.
He's saying that toward us, but
clearly not me.
Let's circle back on the Trubisky thing real quick then. I think our viewpoint on that was that none of us thought he was like a stud or anything, but he had progressively like kind of been growing or trending.
So how dare you talk ill about Mitchell Trubisky?
You're like, talking about the playoff game, which I'm
talking
totally
about
with
well
you
before
on.
The playoff game. Like, yeah. Come on.
Anyway, Marcus Golden deserves a home and should get.
How about T Suggs? This is the end for T Sizzle.
That's maybe fine.
He seems
That's
like fine. A guy who's got to join halfway through the season and like win another Super Bowl or some nonsense.
I'm done with him.
I was showing my kids. We had like clips from our
Michael Bennett
phones.
Too. You can go.
Yeah, but Bennett can go. Like,
you
can
go
I was
be
showing,
interesting somewhere else.
I was showing kids these clips of the Ravens locker room after they won the Niners Super Bowl with the blackout, because they were very into the concept of why the energy went out in the middle of a Super Bowl. And, you know, we're having this nice time watching Ray Lewis celebrate. And then T Sizzle walks into the room and drops like 6 F-bombs in 7 seconds. I'm like, all right, we're going to thanks a lot, Suggs. The gift that keeps on giving to the one's family, please.
I feel you, man.
Came out of nowhere.
All right. Anything else? That's it. Check it out.
We gone.
We gone. We'll be back on Wednesday. Oh, we should make an announcement here. Where to start? Okay. So we have a show coming up on Wednesday, an audio show. Going forward, effective this week at least, we're going to have our show is back on NFL Network. It will be the Around the NFL show on NFL Network. It will be the lead-in show to Total Access, the flagship program on NFL Network. I'm very excited for it. So it's coming. Check it out this Friday. So this week you're going to get podcast today, obviously, podcast Wednesday, TV show Friday, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, NFL Network. The Around the NFL show is back. And we're excited about that. We'll be planning it all week.
Working title, partial access.
No access. <Yeah.
laughs> So that's it.
This big is Dan news.
Yeah, exciting. That's big news. We're excited about it.
Yes, check it are. Out.
This is Dan Hansa signing off for Quiet Storm, the mailman, the old boss, Rick Hollywood. Silent show for Ricky Hollywood in her apartment. Rick, you there?
I'm here.
You guys
forgot how to podcast over the weekend. It's like, just get out. Get
it's
out of here.
It's a tough Monday. It's a tough Monday. Hi, how are you?
Hi.
Did you have a nice weekend?
I did, yes. I did. I've been really do you
You're
want me
to
elaborate?
To that,
yeah. Yeah, yeah. I can't. Yeah, I don't
no,
have
I, no. I don't have. Mark's version of Mitch Trubisky is my version of like Greg being like, I don't understand why anybody would have any issues being at home with their children.
I haven't I said anything. This is all in your
wife.
Own head, but you're trying to make me make up an experience I don't have.
There are no problems in my house. It's like, good. I'm glad you're in the minority. That's all. I'm happy for you, though.
Sound it.
All right. Anybody else have anything to say?
No.
All right. Let us end the show mercifully. Dan Hansa signing off for Quiet Storm, the mailman, the old boss, and Rick Hollywood in her apartment. Until Wednesday.
Thank you.